And now we move from the story of a refugee, one of thousands of such stories that we could have heard, to the story of a faith community and a faith response. And I'm really delighted to welcome next Maureen Sear, who's the Director of Interfaith Scotland, who I know will be inspiring. Maureen.
Firstly, I'd really like to take this opportunity to thank the Scottish Faith Action for Refugees for hosting this really important event and for inviting me to speak today. And especially, I think it's so important to really explore the role of faith communities in supporting those who are indeed incredibly vulnerable. I've been asked to speak, in fact, the kind of remit that I was given was to speak from my personal experience, from my work experience in an interfaith context, and also to share a little bit of maybe an understanding from different faith perspectives. It's quite a big remit, actually, and I was just a tiny bit concerned I might not be able to fulfil it, but I'll have a bash anyway. So I'm going to start with my personal experience. I was born in the northeast of Scotland in a small Scottish city. Well, they like to call it a city. It's called Elgin. My mum and dad, grandparents, great-grandparents, they're all Scottish. The majority of my relatives actually still live in Elgin. I was married in Elgin, as was my eldest daughter. My youngest daughter, my eldest son, were also married in Scotland. I have never personally experienced war, torture, displacement. So you'd imagine that my direct experience of seeking asylum would be limited. And actually, you would be right. Here's a photo of my own family, my husband, who's here somewhere in the audience, my four children, my three grandchildren. I love them all dearly. In fact, they're just life to me. I cannot imagine anything about my life without them in it. But if it were not for the asylum process, not one of them would exist. My husband Nick's grandparents were killed in Hitler's gas chambers, and his mother came to the UK as an unaccompanied Jewish child of 8 years old. A 1938 parliamentary debate resulted in the Kinder Transport Policy, through which 10,000 Jewish children and thousands of adults were given refuge in Britain. David Logan MP said in that parliamentary debate in 1938, now that's a picture of Nick's mum, by the way, and his grandparent who was killed in the gas chamber. David Logan, the MP, said in that parliamentary debate in 1938 that today an opportunity is offered to the British nation to take its proper stand among the nations of the world to protect a minority. The speed and efficiency of the mass movement of Jewish children and adults to the UK was astounding, given the current situation in comparison. Key players in this process were charities, faith communities, and advocacy groups such as the British Refugee Committee. The asylum offered to such vulnerable people was achieved despite acknowledging in that 1938 Commons debate that it is quite obvious that there is an underlying current of suspicion and anxiety, rightly or wrongly, about alien immigration on any big scale. Looking at that in 1938 and thinking of our current context, there is this underlying current of suspicion and anxiety. My children never actually got to meet their grandmother as she died young, but her legacy to all of us is life itself. And I cannot imagine what fate would have awaited her had she not been granted asylum in the UK. No doubt, another child for the Nazi death camps. It was her Jewish relatives and this country that gave her sanctuary. So my faith community experience, Going back to growing up in my hometown of Elgin and how engagement with my faith community deepened my understanding of the need for compassion and a good asylum process. At the age of 17, I became a member of the Baha'i community, and that was in 1976. And I always joke I was the only Baha'i in the village because it was quite an unusual thing to do in 1976 in Elgin, I can assure you. But the Baha'i faith began in Iran and has had a history of religious persecution in its country of origin. Within 2 years of becoming a Baha'i, the Iranian Revolution of 1978 had taken place, and there was a new wave of persecution, imprisonment, torture and murder of Baha'is. I was once again exposed to what it means to flee from such things, as Baha'is from Iran started to seek asylum in Western nations. I remember vividly meeting my first Iranian refugee in Aberdeen. Her name was Mrs. Moyad. She had been so badly tortured in prison that she was deemed not fit to hang. And it was while in hospital that she escaped, eventually making her way to the UK. Her husband was not so lucky. He'd been shot in the stomach, placed still alive in cold storage, and died 3 days later. And the family were not allowed to bury him in the cemetery, in the Baha'i cemetery. But Mrs. Moyad made Scotland her home. It was because she and many others were granted asylum that her family had flourished. I interviewed a young Iranian woman from my own local Baha'i community in eastern Bartonshire and was deeply moved by her love for Scotland. Hedie, who was imprisoned as a 17-year-old child in Iran, on arriving after many traumas in Scotland, said, When we settled in Scotland, oh, it was fantastic. I mean, the minute we arrived in this country, it was freedom, and they actually looked after us. Because I have immediate family, I only needed help for 6 months, because after that, we both started working, so we weren't dependent on the government that much. Then after 5 years, I could apply for a British passport. Also, the Baha'i community here made you really welcome. We go to meetings and stuff like that. It's our second family. You feel protected. You have somebody that you can rely on. It gives us hope in the world. It actually makes life full. When I pray, it's like my soul is fed. Hedy's youngest daughter has just graduated as top of her year with a first class honours in law from Stirling University, and she will go on to use her degree to help others. The combination of family and faith and an asylum process that worked for Hedy means that there is life, protection, and above all, hope. The thousands and thousands fleeing terror right now are no doubt looking to their faith tradition for hope, but they're also looking to governments and saying, we need your help. We desperately need your help. This next image echoes Hedy's sentiments and was from a recent article about a Syrian family who settled in Cote Bridge. Mansour, who'd escaped from repeated arrest and torture, talking of first arriving, said, we were frightened. We were thinking, how are we going to live here? And how would the children settle? When we arrived here and saw the welcome from the people around us and the council, we felt very happy. This is one of the key roles that we as faith communities can play. The role of making people feel welcome, of really seeing our common humanity and reaching out in friendship to those who've sought asylum or refugee status or who've just settled in Scotland. In the last year or two, my personal experiences have spilled over to my work as Director of Interfaith Scotland. The current world crisis has meant that the diverse faith communities of Scotland have been galvanised to help in whatever way they can. Sometimes it's individuals, religious or not, who are moved to assist, and very often it is faith communities who come together and see what can be done to alleviate human suffering. Interfaith Scotland sits on the Government Refugee Integration Forum. It operates a fortnightly interfaith chaplaincy and hosts an annual welcoming for women, refugee women, during Scottish Refugee Festival. Later today, in the workshop session, some of you will hear from Mohammed and his team of faith community volunteers about an interfaith weekend club for asylum seekers and refugees run by Interfaith Glasgow and representatives of faith and belief communities in Glasgow. This weekend club is run by representatives of diverse faith and belief communities working together, and it regularly attracts up to 50 participants from all over the world. But this image on the screen has another interfaith story behind it, as the Abrahamic Roots Group, an interfaith group of women, have been actively supporting the families arriving in Lanarkshire. And I know that around Scotland, the churches and other places of worship will provide a hub of support and welcome to refugees and asylum seekers. It became crystal clear to me how important faith is when at one of the first interfaith chaplaincy meetings that was held in the Interfaith Dialogue Centre, a young man, who shall remain nameless, arrived at the centre. He'd been in Scotland only 3 weeks. He had fled terror and war, had watched his mother die in the journey, and was clearly in a state of extreme distress and trauma. In seeking to assist him, I asked what we could do to help. One of the things he clearly stated was that he really wanted to link up with other Christians from his region of the world. He's from Kurdistan. Sadly, so far, attempts to find other Kurdistani Christians is proving challenging, so if there's any of your churches that know of any Kurdistani Christians, do let me know. But what struck me was the desire to be in a place where hope and faith can be strengthened. This was clear from Hedy's story, where the Baha'i community became her family, and in reading the article about Mansour and his family, again the image on the screen, Mansour's wife states that one of the communities helping her is the local Muslim community, who've been providing Quran classes and helping with her boys. And also during Ramadan in Glasgow, the local mosques are providing iftar for asylum seekers and refugees. If you visit Sami Ling Tibetan Buddhist Centre, you'll see Tibetan Buddhist monks. Many of those may also have sought asylum in Scotland. We have a proud history of welcome, and we need to continue to urge those in power to allow us to live up to that proud history by ensuring policies of welcome and compassion. My own personal understanding from a faith perspective is that in my work I have the honour of getting to know and to work with the diverse faiths of Scotland. Whenever I visit the home of someone from another faith or a place of worship, the words that really come to mind are welcome and hospitality. I know that in times of great personal difficulty in my own life, the love and compassion shown to me by people from all faith backgrounds helped keep hope alive. And so I want to share a few quotes from diverse religions to end with and ask God to give all of us, including government, the wisdom and strength required to assist those desperately seeking our help. Come you who have been blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundations of the world. Because I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you took care of me. I was in prison and you visited me. Then the righteous will say to him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and give you something to eat, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you as a stranger and welcome you, or see you naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? The king will answer them, I tell all of you with certainty, since you did it for one of the least important of these brothers of mine, you did it for me. And a Jewish quote, for the Lord your God is God supreme and Lord supreme, the great, the mighty, the awesome God, upholds the cause of the fatherless and the widow and befriends the stranger, providing him with food and clothing. You too must befriend the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Show kindness to parents and to kindred and orphans and the needy, and to the neighbour that is a kinsman and the neighbour that is a stranger, and the companion by your side, and the wayfarer, and those whom your right hand possess. Surely Allah does not, that loves not the proud and the boastful. And I'll just end with a quote from my own tradition that I felt was apt. See ye no strangers, rather see all as friends, for love and unity come hard when you fix your gaze on otherness. We must be at one with every people, for each is a sign of God, and it was by the grace of the Lord and his power that each did step into the world. Wherefore they are not strangers, but in the family. They're not aliens, but friends, and to be treated as such. Thank you.